Hello and welcome to this podcast, which covers the discussions at the January board meeting of the International Accounting Standards Board. My name is Kristina Reitan and I'm part of the communications team here at the IFRS Foundation. I'm joined by Stephen Cooper, who is a member of the International Accounting Standards Board, and Hugh Shields, who is Executive Technical Director, to talk through the discussions and the decisions at the January 2016 board meeting. Before I hand over to Stephen and Hugh, I just want to mention that the views shared in this podcast are those of the participants and do not necessarily represent those of the International Accounting Standards Board. Steve, one of the topics discussed at the January board meeting was insurance contracts.
Yes, thank you. So the board discussed two aspects of the insurance contract standard. One is the level of aggregation, and the other end is the treatment of discretion as it applies to the general model, particularly in respect of the indirect par contracts. So firstly, on the level of aggregation, this is a subject the board has discussed on a number of occasions, and this latest discussion is to try and clarify some of the decisions we've previously made, and also to be modified, in fact, the decisions, particularly as regards onerous contracts. So there are two aspects of discretion. One is what level of aggregation should be applied when assessing whether a contract or a group of contracts is onerous. So this is deciding whether there's negative CSM, which then has to be recognised in the income statement immediately. And the board came to the decision that for the purpose of onerous contracts, we will group insurance contracts, on the basis that the contracts have cash flows that the entity expects will respond in similar ways to key drivers of risk in terms of the amount and timing, and have similar expected profitability, i.e. a similar contractual service margin as a percentage of the premium. So when the contracts are grouped on that basis, then it's the group that should be assessed for whether it's onerous, and only if the CSM is negative for that group would then a loss be recognised in the statement of comprehensive income. We also looked at the whole question of the level of aggregation and the determination of onerous contracts in respect of the effect of regulation. So this is where regulation requires not to discriminate in the pricing of insurance contracts on the basis of some risk factor, for example, gender. The board decided that we wouldn't make an exception for such situations, and that's which means that you would have to look separately at contracts which have those different characteristics. So the other aspect of level of aggregation is one of allocation. So once you have a CSM, how should you allocate that CSM over the life of the contract, and what level of aggregation you should use to do that. For this, we decided to set a general principle, an objective for the allocation, and then it's up to the individual preparer exactly how they would go about fulfilling that principle, and that may be at an individual contract level or it may be at a certain level of aggregation. So the principle is that we should allocate CSM on the basis that we recognize that profit for an individual contract or a group of homogeneous contracts in profit and loss over the coverage period in a way that best reflects the service to be provided by that contract. That means that if at the end of a contract period, because there is no more service to be provided, then the whole of the CSM should be recognised. That principle can be applied, can be satisfied by accounting for contracts at the individual contract level or at a group level, so long as the principle, the objective is satisfied for that group. We've also decided that we can, in a certain situation, we will deem that principle is satisfied. So we're specifying that you will meet that objective if you have a group of contracts where they have cash flows that the entity expects will respond in similar ways to key drivers of risk, and that on inception have similar expected degrees of profitability. And so long as you can then have the allocation for that contractual service margin in a way that reflects the expected duration and the size of the contracts, then we've given effectively a pass to say, well, if you satisfy those characteristics for the group, then you will meet the objective that we've allocated. So that's quite a long explanation of trying to deal with a particular issue that's come up in the drafting and the work that we've done so far. You can read the detail of the requirements that we've ended up with in the update, but we'll be trying to reflect that in the drafting process that we're going to go through to finalise the standard. The other aspect that I wanted to mention is discretion. We discussed this in December. The board decided to come back to this to talk in more detail about how discretion should be reflected in the model. We sent the staff away the previous board meeting to do some further work on it. What we've decided in this meeting is that the entity will specify at the inception of a contract how it views discretion under a particular contract and then use that specification to distinguish between the effects of changes in market variables and changes in discretion. If the entity is unable to specify that, then it will resort to a default, which is that the benchmark should be the current market rate of return. This is all quite technical and it, as I say, it relates to the indirect par contracts and when changes in cash flow should be reported as part of profit and loss or statement of comprehensive income and when it should be reported as an adjustment to CSM. So this is quite a detailed aspect of the model, but an important one in terms of identifying what goes into the CSM in any one particular period. So that was our discussions on insurance, and that in fact completes the technical discussions that the board has in its deliberations to finalise the insurance standard. In the following month, in February, we'll be discussing the due process steps that we've gone through and looking for permission to draft the final standard. So Hugh, that's insurance, and on to the other aspects of the meeting.
Continue. Thanks very much, Steve. The board continued to discuss the staff's findings on the research project on discount rates, and in particular, the board discussed various aspects of present value measurement, presentation, and disclosure. The board was not asked to make any decisions, and so the staff will develop recommendations for next steps for future board discussion. The board also discussed the findings of the research undertaken so far on the measurement proposals included in the exposure draft on the measurement of quoted investments in subsidiaries, joint ventures and associates at fair value. So these are various proposed amendments which apply to IFRS 10, 12 and also IAS 27, 28 and 36, as well as some illustrative examples in IFRS 13, our standard on fair value measurement. And the board in particular discussed the feedback received from various constituents, including users, preparers, and also the outcome of some academic review work that has been undertaken. The board noted it will use all of this work carried out during the research by feeding it into the post-implementation review of IFRS 13 on fair value measurement. And then finally, the board discussed various aspects of the clarifying amendments to IFRS 15, the revenue from contracts with customers standard. In relation to transition requirements, the board confirmed its previous decisions. Firstly, to require an entity to apply the clarifying amendments to IFRS 15 retrospectively. And secondly, that no special transition provisions are needed for a first-time adopter. In relation to effective date, the board tentatively decided to require an entity to apply the clarifications to IFRS 15 for annual reporting periods beginning on or after 1 January 2018, and also to permit an entity to apply the clarifying amendments early. And then finally, the board considered re-exposure, due process, and permission to ballot. And in particular, the board reviewed the due process steps that it has undertaken so far in developing the clarifications to IFRS 15 and could also consider the re-exposure criteria in the due process handbook. All board members confirmed that they are satisfied that the board has completed the necessary due process steps and therefore instructed the staff to commence the drafting process for the final amendments to IFRS 15. The board expects to issue the final amendments in March of 2016.
Thank you, Stephen. The official summary of the January board meeting, which is called ISB Update, can be found on the IFRS Foundation's website, www.ifrs.org. There will be some more details there on the discussions held at the January board meeting. Thank you for listening.